PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Foschall of Mizuno Golf fame. Welcome back, my friend.
I appreciate it. It's always feels like it's been too long, and we always have tons to talk about. So I'm looking forward to being on here chatting with you today.
I feel like the pre-shows when you come on, it's like, all right, what's new? And you start listing off all the new things. I'm like, oh God, we need to do this more often.
Right.
But yeah, you guys have a ton of new stuff happening right now, which makes sense because it's early year and, you know, PGA shows upon us and golfers are getting itchy. I'm getting itchy here in Ohio with all the snow hanging out. But how did 2024 wrap up for you?
24 is a great year for Mizuno. I mean, it feels like we got a lot of momentum going right now. It feels like every year we just get a little bit better and we get recognized for a couple more items and a couple more things. And, you know, it was a big year because we had two launches, which is a little bit rare for Mizuno. We're used to being kind of one big iron launch a year, but last year we launched the Mizuno Pro 2.4 family in the spring. And then in the fall, we came with the JPX 925 hot metal stuff. So to really have both those launches is awesome. And then to follow it up just only a couple months later with the Forged and then a couple other kind of interesting launches as well in the spring. It feels like there's just a lot of stories around Mizuno right now, which makes me happy.
Yeah. Well, the last time I had you on, we were dancing around the JPX lineup and you were sort of toying around with the idea that Forge would probably be here. You didn't say it. Mm-hmm. You did a good job. I didn't have to edit anything out, but I think everyone thought, hoped, and really assumed that Forge would come, but you sort of shocked the world by bringing it out in two finishes, which, listen, I freaked out when I saw that. First of all, they look fantastic. And then I saw the black finish. I was like, oh yeah, that must have been super fun to drop.
Totally. I mean, it's interesting being such a global company like we are. And, you know, I know the THP crew is a group that is kind of up to date on what's going on, not just here, but kind of everywhere. So it's like the Forge is kind of the worst kept secret because it gets leaked in Japan and they launch it a little bit earlier than we do. We bring it in the spring. So that's why, to me, the exciting thing was that we didn't just say, oh, and now you can get it here. Like, we kind of held the little ace up our sleeve to be able to say, oh, guess what? Not only are you getting what you thought you were getting, but here's an even cooler version of it coming as well. So that was kind of a fun thing, the development side, to be able to tease that it's not just the same old launch. And on top of that, like, the tech behind it is totally different than we've ever done on a JPX Forge model too. So there's a lot of stories to talk about with that.
Well, let's get started. What sort of began the process of design and opened the door to some of these new technologies being introduced into it? I assume you had to be careful considering how positive the last release was of Forged. You wanted to be careful to maintain a lot of that while adding the things that would really surprise golfers.
Yeah, I mean, if you trace the lineage of, like, that golf club, it goes back a long way. Like, 925 Forge, before it was 923, 921, 919, 900. And then you even get before that, there was 850. Then it was, for a while, it was the 825 Pro, the JPX 800. And then that even goes back to the MX family, like MX200, MX25, MX23, MX20. Like, it goes back way longer than people realize it does. And with that, like, the technology behind it has continued to evolve and continue to advance. But I'd say it's taken incremental steps, aside from a couple, like, real drastic material changes and construction changes. One of those when we introduced the boron material for the first time. Since then, I know this is by far the biggest jump that we've made ever with it. And again, that's a big long way to talk about what did we actually do. You know, rather than just one piece forging it and then going back and doing some sort of post-processing after, which has lived. It was a T-slot cut for a while. It was what we called our micro slot that came in a milling through the sole for a while. This time, it actually involved an investment in some brand new machinery at Chuokoyo, which is our exclusive forging house in Hiroshima, Japan. And that machinery has allowed us to forge thinner than we've ever forged before, and not just a little bit thinner, like significantly thinner than we've ever forged before, which has allowed us to execute a face geometry that is more closely related to the hot metal family than anything we've ever done. So I'd say, I kind of joke that this is the most hot metal forged we've ever launched, but the feel is even better. So it's like, it's really the almost no compromise golf club. The feel is there of the one piece grain flow forging. And with the new machinery, it allows us to go down to 1.5 millimeters on a forged face, which is just ridiculously thin. So with the result of that is our contour lips face, which is the geometry of the face, which you've never been able to execute before, gives you a massive COR, a massive core area. So just great ball speed. And it's funny, I was like looking at the incremental steps we had been taking over the last number of generations. And had we continued at like the same path where every 2 years we were jumping up this much in COR and this much in COR, this is the equivalent of, had we stuck on that same trajectory, this is like a 16-year jump in performance. So it was like, it's significant just to paint the picture of like how different this golf club is than the previous versions.
That's a big, big step. And that, you know, I see the chromoly notations, and obviously that's been a really fun story, not just for JPX, but from my perspective on it, because that's what the original introduction of chromoly really got me fired up about the line in total, and sort of connecting the dots between skilled players with players who are looking for a lot of help between forged and a hot metal pro. What I'm curious about is there has to be this sort of bar you move back and forth on with a product like Pro, or sorry, like Forge, that says, all right, the skill of which you should be to use this club is here. And you go kind of back and forth on that line to say, well, if you're that good, go to the Mizuno Pro family and get a benefit from that, you know? Or if you're struggling, then go to Hot Metal Pro. Where does this fit in that line, sort of connecting the dots between the two lineups?
I mean, it definitely blurs the line, you know, especially now that we have the 245 model, which is such a, you know, powerful beast with a hollow body construction. You can do a lot with hollow body. Those lines are blurred a little bit. What I say, and the way I kind of compare the forged and the 245, because I'd say those are the two closest, is the 245, because it has some tungsten weighting and that hollow body construction, it launches a little bit higher. So it's designed for somebody who wants a little bit more launch forgiveness. I'd say the JPX version, the forged, it's a little bit more of just like face forgiveness. Like it's not going to quite launch as high. It tends to spin just a touch less. And it's interesting in terms of like trying to paint the perfect player for it, because head shape wise, it looks like something a low handicapper would play. I mean, it's thin top line, thin sole. It looks way more demanding than it plays. So I'd say it's a look that appeals to a low handicap, a single digit, five and below. However, if you can accept that it looks a little intimidating and can trust that the performance is there, I could see this easily creeping up into the, you know, the low teens and stuff like that in terms of a player handicap.
What about blending? Everyone is obsessed with blending nowadays, and not just from the JPX lineup, but you know, I want pure precision in my shots under an 8-iron, then I want, you know, pure support in my shots under an 8-iron. Like how easy it is to blend this throughout your sets? Is it encouraged to kind of stay within the JPX family if that's the route you're going to go?
We always encourage, don't just grab a set off the rack, get the right 8-iron, the right 9-iron, the right pitching wedge, the right 6-iron, the right 5-iron, whatever. That being said, it almost has gotten to a point where I'd say you don't need to blend quite as much, particularly on like the scoring iron side. You know, we go back a couple of years, like the MP20 family or the MP18 family in particular, it was designed 100% to, we think almost everybody should blend. I'd say with the Forge, I don't know that that's the case anymore. And the reason I say that is because there is some really nice transitions within the geometry from the 4-iron down to the gap wedge that almost builds a combo set into the construction. Meaning like when we get into the scoring irons, they are 1025E pierced like mild carbon steel. They are thinner. They are smaller. When you get into the longer irons, then that's where chromoly kind of creeps into the set. The COR benefit creeps in. So it's almost like it's the blending is engineered in. Granted, there's still some people who want even smaller, like even more extremes, but I don't think it's as necessary as a lot of people, or I'd say as we used to engineer clubs. Mm. It's like we kind of straddled the line to where you could get away with very easily not blending this one.
Yeah. And I do see some notations in, as people review the product on your website, there's a clear differential between the 7 and the 8 iron. And as you go mm-hmm. in the different directions, we see that a lot, I think, in golf right now, is that understanding that golfers desire different things, the long iron as they do with the right. short iron. is that going to likely be a design philosophy that Mizuno really carries on for the next few generations? Or is it like here to stay kind of thing?
You know, I think it is something that we embrace is, you know, when we're looking at a set, you know, and again, this it's so interesting because this is like it's the player's distance category, if you want to call it that, because it is the grain flow forging. It has the feel. It's got the slightly stronger spec. It's got the COR built in that category, because player is a part of it. Like we always want to kind of connect down to something that a player is happy to look at. We don't want to shove it so far distance that it's just like it turns off that better player. So you'll see us continue to stretch the playability of a set on the long iron side, but then try to connect it to, again, I've got this graph in my head that I'm trying to explain that doesn't make sense, but it's like, if better players or, you know, single digit handicaps want a wedge that does this, then our job is more to keep that wedge there. And then with our different sets, it's almost like, again, I'm going to nerd out here. It's different slopes of how the forgiveness ramps up from there. So it's like on a Mizuno Pro, for example, I'd say the slope of playability from a long iron down to a wedge is relatively flat. You know, the 4-iron you want it to be a little bit more, but it's not significantly more. When you get into a hot metal forge or even a 2-4-5, that slope gets steeper. That 4-iron is going to be significantly easier to hit than when you get down to like a wedge where it's a more demanding club, it's a smaller club. So I say we continue to tweak that slope to connect to a relatively playable pitching wedge for everybody. Did that even make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's just really interesting because I think there was a period of time where everyone said a blended set was the most important thing. And then you start to see these companies. Well, I think, first of all, we went from like, I'm playing only a set, to then suddenly the eyes are open like, oh, I could mix the two. Mm-hmm. And then it got like way overblown. And I think finally you're seeing companies recognize. But the other part of that is the challenge in technology, right? As you go toward the pitching wedge, some of the technologies that you're trying to apply to support the long iron shape, I guess you could say, shot shape, is sort of diminishing when you get down to the pitching wedge, right? Like you're not trying to maintain or perform in the same sort of way. You're starting to work more on control. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I mean, especially when you're talking about a player's, anything that has the word distance in it, a player's distance club, the idea and the goal of the 4-iron is, how do I get this 4-iron to go as high as possible? Because you've built COR into it. You're engineering height into that. That player doesn't necessarily want a pitching wedge that goes as high as possible. So the design goal of those are very different. So with that, you have to be very cognizant of how the CG flows throughout the set, how the COR flows throughout the set, how the head shape, size, all of those things flow throughout the set. So yeah, absolutely.
So biggest question I have on 925 Forged is really built around sound. There was something about the last couple Forged series that just really stood out to me from a sound perspective. It seemed like there was a lot of value put in that, and with the understanding that the type of player that will pursue it is pretty focused on good, solid quality contact and not giving up a lot when it comes to that. How much of that went into 925?
It's massive. I mean, again, as a Mizuno advocate, like someone who preaches the Mizuno gospel, feel is so critical in what we do, and particularly anything that has the word Forged on it. And, you know, I love to go off on this little tangent of, you know, so many clubs right now say Forged on them. Like, you see so many things passed off as what a customer, a golfer walks into it, and I see Forged written on the hosel or Forged written on the back. There's expectations that come with that. You know, you first expect to pay a little bit more. The Forge usually costs a little bit more than the cast version. But with that, the reason why players are happy to make that investment to the forging is the expectation of the consistency it's going to deliver and ultimately the feel it's going to deliver. So then I like to talk about, you know, where does that feel come from and why does a forged feel better than a cast? And that's, and ultimately it comes down to how long it vibrates, how true it vibrates. And that more long vibration equals more feedback, more feel. So with that being said, in the world of forgings out there that all say forged, to get the most feedback and the longest vibration, you need long grains. You need the forge part to extend across the longest span of the golf club, which is the face, through the heel, like from the toe, through the heel, out the hosel. That's the longest band on the golf club. If you can have a piece that long that vibrates, you will get more feedback. All that to say, you look at what says Forged right now, and it's usually a Forged body and a cast face, or a Mirage steel face, or a Forged face and a cast body, a stainless steel body. Like, there's so many examples of it, of a golf club that doesn't feature or doesn't deliver on the expectation that a customer is looking for or a golfer is looking for when they buy a Forged golf club. And that's why we take it so seriously when we're engineering a distance club that says Forged on it, that it's forged, is that we are forging it to deliver that level of expectation. So put it up against a lot of these other golf clubs. There's a lot of player assistance Forged clubs that perform awesome. Do they feel great? Not a lot of them. And a lot of them, like, actually they hide feel rather than enhance feel. And with Mizuno, we are never trying to hide feel. We're trying to bring feel to the forefront of the experience of playing that club.
Yeah. So then in the case of this, you go from 7 to 8 iron and there is different structure in place. Mm-hmm. How challenging is that to connect the dot between the two?
It is. There's always a challenge. And again, like, there's a feel challenge and there's a gapping challenge. I'd say the gapping challenge isn't as hard as people think, because say you're going from a high COR 7 iron to a not high COR 8 iron. Ultimately, you know, COR is measured with the face perpendicular to the, you know, how much ball speed on a rebound does it get? You don't hit a 7 iron with 0 degrees aloft. You hit a 7 iron with 32 degrees aloft, depending on. So the kind of the direction and the force applied of that COR isn't, you're not recognizing the full COR. So it's actually getting diminished as loft increases. So the gapping of it is not as difficult as it seems. The feel is always a thing, though, when you're going from a thin faced iron to something that's one piece grain flow forged 1025, and you're going from a chromoly to a 1025. So that's the thing you have to be very cognizant of, is how do you engineer that feel? And that's where we're great with our harmonic impact technology, of recognizing vibration frequencies and vibration trends and reinforcing certain areas to make sure that they all feel consistent. Does the 7 iron feel exactly like the 8? It's not exactly like it, but you recognize that it's the same family. You get the same level of responsiveness. The 8 is not quite as explosive as the 7, but you still recognize that it still has that soft feel in it. So there's always a challenge, but it's always something that the benefit outweighs the slight, you know, slight little bits that may be off.
Okay. When it comes to your bag, actually, I'll ask you a question. You had mentioned this a couple years ago to me that it, not that you'd ever want to, but if you could just give up on all the irons in the lineup and keep only one, you'd keep Forged. And that may have changed release over release, mm-hmm. but that to me tells me that you are deeply invested in the quality of this iron. Is that a continuation here? Do you feel the same?
I do. I mean, to me, it's the JPX Forge model is the no compromise model. There's no part of the design where we compromised anywhere. Like, it delivers on the distance technology, the feel, the look, the sound. All boxes are checked. I'll say that's where the Mizuno Pro family is awesome. 245 is awesome, but it's not quite as forgiving. You know, the Hot Metal Pro, awesome golf club. The feel is not the same level as the Forge. To me, it's like, and I think the analogy I maybe gave to you, but I think it's a silly one, but it's like if there was this weird rule, like it's some sort of dictator came in and said, you as a company, you get to make one set of irons. You get to pick one. This is the one that I would pick. Because to me, again, there's no compromise anywhere.
Can I tell you a bit of a story?
I'd love to hear them.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a bit of a transitional moment because there's a new set of irons that I didn't know were coming at all. I had no idea. And I'll be honest with you. I played the MP18 CB irons for way mm-hmm. longer than I should have. They provided me with some of the best iron play of my, let's say, 30 years playing golf, not necessarily mm-hmm. with the same tier of product, but you know what I'm saying? I was emotionally invested in those irons. They mm-hmm. checked all the boxes from a sound perspective, performance perspective. I felt really home with them. And they went to MP20. I didn't quite see the same thing. 221 series or 22 series didn't mm-hmm. see the same thing. And then we come to 24 series, and it just seems to be a continuation of this new story. And then on a cold, crappy Ohio day, I see that Mizuno Pro S3 mm-hmm. is being launched, and these give me MP18 CB feels. They create a memory, a recollection of memory that gives me all the feel I need and wonderment of a cold day.
Yep.
Why have you done this, and where did it come from?
That's a great question. And the backstory I kind of love as to how we got here and where it's going. So the backstory is, honestly, if you look at where the JPX family is, you know, there's a missing member of the 925 family, and that's the JPX Tour. And when we launched JPX Tour, that was with the JPX 900 family. So that was right between when we were launching the MP20s and then the MP18s is when the 919 family came or 900 family came out. So you're right. That old split cavity MP18, that was honestly, it was a blade that had a little cavity in it. That's all it was. That lived in the Mizuno Pro world or the MP world. What you've seen, and again, I don't want to discredit it at all because Mizuno's seen massive growth in the Mizuno Pro family, but you've seen the player's distance category become so massive that if there's always been three irons launched with an MP or Mizuno Pro, the middle one now has started to pull a little bit more weight in terms of reaching up into, you know, the family of forgiveness, distance, all that stuff, where it's become a player's distance club as opposed to just a straight up player's club. So, you know, MP18 had the split cavity. MP20, with that, there was the tie muscle design. And then as you get into the 2-2, it became basically a chromoly club that has some COR built in and a player's distance club. 2-4-3 is the exact same. So it's like that one piece grain flow forged, ultra feel focused, not trying to speak to a large audience. It's for that person who knows what they want. They're not looking for extra distance. They're looking for control and precision. That golf club has left the Mizuno Pro world and it lived in the JPX world for a while. I talked a few minutes ago about how the JPX 925 Forge is the most hot metal forge we've ever done. We could have made JPX 925 Tour and put the same back design on, you know, a shallow cavity, but it's so different from that family in terms of what JPX does now that we saw this as a great opportunity to strip it from there and establish a new family. And that's where, again, I'm going to go into the long drawn out story too. I literally sat down with Keith Mitchell. This was at Sea Island about 2 years ago and had a discussion about his irons and where he's looking to go with his irons. Had same discussion with Ben Griffin at the exact same, like right after Keith left the meeting, Ben came in. And the discussion was, you know, we're going to continue to make new golf clubs. We're a club OEM. That's what's going to happen. They're going to continue to play golf clubs and be encouraged to play our new clubs. What do they want out of clubs? And it's so funny, like the tour player mentality versus, you know, the retailer mentality. Tour players don't want their irons to do anything different. They don't want to change. They want a new set of their existing set. They want it, you know, a new groove on the exact same club that I know my 7-iron goes 182. It goes at 6,900 RPM. It lands at 47 degrees. Like, they want it to do exactly that. So the conversation became, how can we start designing clubs more for, I'd say, a group of players, the tour players, the elite strikers, the great ball strikers who don't need that distance. And that's where what S stands for in S3 is signature. The signature family comes from that of, let's design a true one-piece grain flow forge all about feel. That's going to just deliver on that in spades. And with that, it's the S3 because it's a member of a family that's going to continue to grow. We're not replacing it for a while. It's going to live in our family for 4 years. We're not going to replace it in 2 years. You will see other signature models come. They will be one-piece grain flow forge. They will be super clean, super classic. They will not have COR built in. They will not be strong lofted. Like, we're not doing any of those things. It becomes, what is a player's preference for head shape, turf interaction? Those are the main things that you'll see within the S family. So different soles, different head shapes. And that head shape could be, you know, top line thickness preferences, offset preferences, stuff like that. So this is the first step into that. And it's funny because I love that it caught everybody off guard because it seems kind of out of the blue. But at the same time, this is a step backwards in terms of creating a classic. You know, when Mizuno Pros or MPs have technology on them, like, what's the hottest COR we can get today? It kind of dates them a little bit because it's hard to establish a classic with a technology that is great today. So that's where, when people like think back to the clubs they loved, a lot of times it's the zero tech clubs. It's those ones that are the old school, you know, 33s, 29s, 14s, TN87s, MP32s, MP62s, like those clubs that don't feature something that dates them. And to me, that's what this S3 is. It's a non-dated golf club.
Well, that's a lot to digest. And actually, you know, it's funny, man. I'm more than happy to be the type of person that would encourage anyone to play the depth of forgiveness that they can look at and stand and have success with. Mm-hmm. I don't object to that at all. In fact, I very much agree with it and believe in technology advancements. I do it a lot with my long irons where, you know, right. I really desire to get the benefits of that. but then I look back at my experience with like 221, I blended the 225 at the very top, which is perfect.
Yep.
But I always felt like a little bit of a performance gap in that like 7, 6 and mm-hmm. or 7 and 8, where I really miss the cavity a bit. But I kind of grew up playing Mizuno cavity, like MP63s mm-hmm. and, you know, things like that. So there's a level of familiarity when I got to the MP18s. It was like, this is home for me.
Right.
So then I go try and 2-4 series and I really lean toward the muscle back, and then again to the 245 at the top of the bag. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know if I'm just mentally conditioned to prefer that, but I do want to ask, because a lot of it for me was feel, why I didn't go to the tour.
Right.
I preferred the 221 or 241 feel. So I guess the question would be, what about these would be comparative to that? And how much of the steel manipulation does it require to get to a place where you want to be?
Yeah, the tour always had a little bit of a firmer feel than a traditional Mizuno Pro. And that's using the same materials. Like, they've been 1025E Pearcelite mild carbon steel for a while. They've been Grainflow Forge for a while. But when you're talking like families of clubs, that's where the temptation to start blending happens. You know, we don't actually see a ton of blending between Mizuno Pro and JPX. Usually you're in one family or the other. So with that, the JPXs tended to vibrate and give a feel that was a little bit firmer, that connected a little bit better with a forge model or a hot metal model that had a little bit of a hotter sound to it. The Mizuno Pros are all about just how soft can we make this thing. So our targets of our harmonic impact technology, like the frequencies we are trying to hit, our baseline is a muscle back. And a muscle back is reinforced and is strategically weighted to vibrate at certain frequencies, particularly in the, again, third and fourth mode of vibration. We're talking between 7,500, 11,000 hertz, like that area is key to a muscle back feel. And that's our target with the S family. That wasn't the target with the JPX family. So the feel will be softer. The feel will be more muscle back. It's a club that I'm so excited about too. You know, you talk about growing up playing Mizuno cavity backs. It's funny. I know some of y'all are listening, you know, online, like just straight up listening to this. Those who aren't, who are actually watching, like back behind me, I've got this bag right here is my MP62, MP63, MP64, Mizuno Pro SC. It's all of the shallow cavities that are what I play. Like, I'm just like you. That's the type of golf club that I love. So to me, that's why this is such a cool family. And the whole signature series, like, development and conceptualization of it, and how do we bring this to market, and how do you keep a club exciting for 4 years, and, you know, how do you continue to talk about it and build that family? It's been a really fun step, and like what you'll see in the future will just round it all out, and you'll start to see a lot of blending within these families. Like, it's super cool.
So you had mentioned that the carryover will be a number of years, but there's potential for subtle tweaks. You don't have to go too deep into the well here. I know you guys like to be fairly cautious with that, but are we talking like an S2 could show up with a different offset, but similar in a lot of other places, like that kind of stuff?
It's possible. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, a big part of it is, and again, this will be where we kind of hang our hat on, we want the tour players to be playing what you go purchase. You know, as I talked about a few minutes ago with that shallow cavity and even muscle backs at this point, like as they continue to get replaced year after year after year after year, and tour players don't want the replaced one, it's become so common to see, I'll use a couple of examples, you know, the P7 TW, the P7 RM that one guy's playing, you know, the old school Titleist blade stamped JT or stamped AS, like, because they want to play the old one. So rather than make these one-off old versions for players, the idea behind the signature family is to work with our players to make sure we are servicing them properly and make the clubs that they want to play so that they're playing the same ones as you. So look in a tour player's bag, look in our tour players' bags, and it'll give you ideas of what's coming in the future.
Okay.
That's the easiest way I can kind of paint the picture.
Yeah, I want to play the S-CV model. When is that coming?
I would love that too, right? It's so funny. I joke about, like, again, we're Mizuno. Like, there's so much heritage and there's family in there. There's like subtle things that you try to put your own little flair on. Naming, there's no chance for somebody to put a name on it. The Mizuno name is the name for us.
Yeah.
That holds way more weight than a CV does.
Well, one of the, I know you're short on time, but one of the last things I want to know is specifically on the tour feedback, how excited were the guys when you brought this to them, or even the forge, and let them hit it? Like, it's always interesting to see their reaction, right?
Yeah, it's funny that I'd say two different reactions between the S3 and the forge, both positive, but positive in different ways. John Freeman, who's one of our engineers, who he had his hands really deep into the S3 family. He tells the story of the initial prototype testing with the S3. Ben Griffin offered him 10 grand on the spot. Can I play these this week? So it was like, literally, it was like ready to go. These are ready to go in the bag whenever. Like, I'm ready. They're perfect. So initial excitement. When we're talking about the Forge model, it's so different than any Forge we've had in the past that Jeff Cook, who's Mizuno's tour rep, who's out there with the guys every day, Jeff Cook, you know, he knows I'm going to bring in this many sets of this model, this many sets of this model. And he brought in his predicted number of JPX Forge that's based off of what the 923 was and the 921 was. And then when the final product hit the tour van, he's like, oh, no, I need more of these. So it's like it's a delayed excitement versus the initial excitement of the S family. Because once he started to understand the product a little bit more and get it in the hands of players, I think you're going to see a lot more of those than we've had for a JPX Forge in a long time, particularly on the long irons.
That's awesome. Are you an S3 guy? What are you going to do?
You know, I've been... I talked about playing the old school set for a long time. I've transitioned to the 243s, and I've played some really good golf with 243s this past year. So currently, I still have my 243s. I've not built up S3s yet, but I've got some friends in the industry who have recently built up some sets of S3s and keep sending me their build pictures. And I'm like, man, it's tempting. So I will have a set of S3s at some point. I know that. The tricky thing is going to be, what do I do with the lofts of them? Because I've gotten used to 243 loft. Hmm. So I haven't quite wrapped my head around what I'm going to do yet. I hate club testing when it's cold out. Like, I'm just, those who know what I look like, I am not built for the cold. I'm a scrawny kid. So it's like, I lose so much distance in the winter that I would be so scared to go out with an S3 right now that just would go nowhere for me. Mm-hmm. So I want to wait for it to get a little bit warmer, but then I'm going to do a lot of testing, and I know there will be some in my bag.
Yeah. You and your gruesome Atlanta winters, we all pity you so badly.
Oh. Terrible. It's the Arctic here.
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy, there's a bunch more to talk about. So maybe we have you back on, talk about some of the wedge conversation that probably should happen. New golf balls, new putters. Like, you got a lot going on. So unfortunately, we're going to have to cut this one a little bit short, but good luck at the show this year. I'm sure you guys will kill it as you always do. And make sure you heckle those THP guys as they walk through.
I will, for sure. And let's get this again. Let's run it back for round two. I'm excited for it.
Awesome. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Don Brown for True Temper, here answering another question. Very interesting one this week. Question is about, is there a too thin or too thick of a wall in a graphite shaft design, and what effect does that have? It has a couple of effects. One, too thin, the shaft's just probably going to break. We see a lot of times when we get very light into these 30-gram shafts, any sort of unintended impact can cause the shaft to fail. So say you got a 35-gram driver shaft in your bag, you hit a chunky wedge and you kind of flip the wedge back to the bag, or like myself and some of my colleagues, whip the wedge back at your bag. You may think it's harmless, but if it hits your lightweight graphite shaft, it can cause a delamination in that shaft that you won't see, and the shaft might break the next go around. Too thick, on the other hand, really comes more about feel. When you have a lot of layers in a graphite shaft, they dampen vibration in a way that steel wouldn't. So if you're talking about a 125-gram graphite shaft versus a 125-gram steel shaft is thin wall and transmits vibrations very well. Better player will be able to feel if they've hit the ball out of the heel, off the toe, what their miss was. 125 grams of graphite is going to feel like a dead fish. It's going to have no feel to it at all, dampen all the vibration, so you don't get any of that feedback. Which for some players might like that, but a lot of better players want to get that feedback. They want to know what their miss is. So that's why you see steel still preferred by 90%+ of PGA Tour players.
Well, hey, if you are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Check out the new JPX 925 forged in also black finish, which looks insane. And if you're feeling awesome, you feel like you got great ball striking going on this week, go check out S3 as well. It looks absolutely stunning. It rocked me to my golfing core. So take care, guys, and we'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.